Hello. Yeah, it's good to be back. I've been traveling, so I haven't been here. I'm actually traveling next weekend too. I need to look and see what time I get home. I don't remember if I'm home in time to teach this segment or not. So I will look, and of course I'll send an email and let you know. But after next weekend, as far as I know, I'm not traveling again until March. So then I should be here for a while. I wanted to start with a song. I'm looking it up right now. Here it is. This song is by Lucy Wainwright Roach or Roachy. I'm not sure how you say her name. It's Roche. And the name of the song is Everywhere. And I think it's just lovely. I was listening to it yesterday. And then I knew I wanted to listen to it again right now. So here we go.
Can you hear me calling out your name? You know that I've fallen and I don't know what to say. Speak a little louder, I'll even shout. You know that I'm proud and I can't get the words out. Oh, I wanna be with you everywhere. Oh, I wanna be with you everywhere. Something's happening to me. My friends say I'm acting peculiarly. Come along, baby, you better make it start. You better make it soon before you break my heart. Oh, I wanna be with you everywhere. Oh, I wanna be with you everywhere. Can you hear me calling out your name? You know that I've fallen and I don't know what to say. Come along, baby, you better make it start. You better make it soon before you break my heart. Oh, I wanna be with you everywhere. I wanna be with you everywhere. Oh, I wanna be with you everywhere.
Okay, I'm gonna play the beginning of that song again, and then I'll tell you why. We won't listen to the whole song, but I do want to play the beginning part. So here we go.
Can you hear me calling out your name? You know that I've fallen and I don't know what to say.
Okay, so the song starts off, can you hear me calling out your name? You know that I've fallen and I don't know what to say. And then she goes into, I want to be with you everywhere. And you know, lately I've had that feeling that I have fallen. And so I'm sure that's why right now I'm so incredibly attracted to this song. You know, it's interesting because Jesus tells us in A Course in Miracles that we do not know our retreats from our advances. And that's my experience too. You know, Peace Pilgrim, when she talked about the spiritual path, she talked about hills and valleys. And she's called the hilltop experiences. That's when we're easily in peace, easily in joy. Everything is flowing. You know, we could say true perception is happening. And then the valleys are the times when you seem to go back into ego, or ego seems to arise, and you don't feel as connected. And she said that these valleys were very important, because it's when we go into the valley, that's when we are actually letting go of ego. We're letting go of ego. Ego needs to arise in order for us to see it and let go of it, which means the valley is a very important part of the spiritual path, but it doesn't feel as good as the hilltop. So we all enjoy the hilltops, and sometimes we make the mistake of judging ourselves, of believing that when the ego is arising again, that somehow we've done something wrong. But again, Jesus reminds us that we do not know our retreats from our advances, and I have learned to become excited, actually, when the ego is showing up again. Because I know the importance of those valleys. I know that ego is showing up, so I can, you know, let go of ego a little more, take another step forward. So there's still that feeling of having fallen, you know, you've fallen from grace almost. But it's really a miraculous time. It's a very miraculous time. So I'm very, very grateful for those valleys. Without those valleys and the opportunities to let go of ego, we wouldn't really make any progress at all. So with that said, let's enjoy the song one more time. Here we go.
Can you hear me calling out your name? You know that I've fallen and I don't know what to say. Speak a little louder, I'll even shout. You know that I'm proud and I can't get the words out. Oh, I wanna be with you everywhere. Oh, I wanna be with you everywhere. Something's happening to me. My friends say I'm acting peculiarly. Come along, baby, you better make it start. You better make it soon before you break my heart. Oh, I wanna be with you everywhere. Oh, I wanna be with you everywhere. Can you hear me calling out your name? You know that I've fallen and I don't know what to say. Come along, baby, you better make it start. You better make it soon before you break my heart. Oh, I wanna be with you everywhere. I wanna be with you everywhere. Oh, I wanna be with you everywhere.
Yeah, gorgeous song. And you know, the valleys, the valleys when that ego is really showing up, that's not a time to be tolerant of the ego. And it's also not a time to fear the ego. It's really a time to see the ego with clarity, with non-judgmental awareness. To remember what you truly want. And then to let go of ego. And let go of ego, you know, for me, that means changing my habits. Some people refer to, you know, what we might call the ego. Some people refer to it as conditioning. And really all a conditioning is a habit. You know, if I, for example, if it's my thing to get annoyed with people who are late, that's a habit. It's a habit to get annoyed with late people. It's my conditioning. Or we could say it's ego. It doesn't really matter what word that we use. But for me, whenever I am in the valley and the ego is showing up, so that I can see another conditioning, another habit, another belief that I didn't see before. That to me is also a call for change. Sometimes I see clearly exactly what that change needs to be. And sometimes I need to be patient until that clarity arises. But once I know what that change is, I like to embrace that change as quickly as I can. And sometimes that's not immediate. Sometimes, you know, these habits are strong and we continue to slip into them for a while. But my purpose is to change the habit as quickly as possible. You know, Peace Pilgrim also used to say whenever she saw something that she knew that she should not be doing, she would stop doing it. And whenever she saw something that she should be doing, she would start doing it. And she always talked about when there was something that she needed to stop doing, something that she should not be doing, she talked about a quick relinquishment. That's the way she would say it. Quick relinquishment. Because she said that if you knew that you should not be doing it and you continued to do it, it would cause more pain. So the faster that you change the habit, the better. Today I was reading in John Mundy's book, Living A Course in Miracles. And also right now I am teaching three classes of people, an introduction to Buddhism class using Thich Nhat Hanh's book, The Heart of Buddha's Teaching. And today all three of these things have come together in a beautiful way. So my latest valley, along with Thich Nhat Hanh's teaching, along with John Mundy's teaching. And what they're all saying is the same. They're all saying that there are bad habits, you know, for lack of better words, negative habits, I think is what John Mundy calls them, unwholesome tendencies, is what Thich Nhat Hanh would call them. Just conditioning is what Muji would call them. but there are these habits that are not helpful, do not point toward awakening. They only point towards continuing to believe I am the personality. Right? There are these habits that once they are seen, they need to be let go. And to continue to indulge these habits is to continue to indulge the ego. They also all recommend acquiring new habits. You know, like Peace Pilgrim said, when she saw something she shouldn't be doing, she stopped doing it. But she also said, when she saw something she should be doing, she started doing it. So they also talk about acquiring new habits or helpful habits. You know, habits that are helpful are habits like meditation. I mean, I think the Course in Miracles workbook is all about acquiring new habits, having the mind with God instead of having the mind lost in thoughts about the world, self and the world, right? So right now, what I am undergoing is a process of changing habits. Some additional habits that once upon a time I thought were nothing. I mean, just, you know, nothing at all. Like it didn't matter that I had those habits. They were benign to me. And now I see that they are not benign, because I think as we awaken, we become more and more subtle in our seeing. So habits that at one time I thought were benign, I see now are not at all benign, and so I'm changing them. Now, Barb says not forcing the change. I guess you would have to, not to me, I'm not forcing the change, but I want to talk about that a little more. I don't want to just say no. I am putting effort into making the change. I don't call it forcing because I want to make the change. It's a change I want to make. I have seen the unwholesome nature of these habits. I've seen how they indulge ego. I've seen how they're not at all helpful, and I want to change them. But in the process, I am being gentle with myself. You know, it'd be wonderful to just say, okay, so I'm going to stop doing this and start doing this starting right now and then have a change. But my experience is sometimes it's like that, actually. But my experience is lots of times there's a lag. There's a lag from the time that I notice the need for change and when the change really fully occurs. We could call it a transition. And during the transition, I'm very gentle with myself. I never judge myself anymore. Judging myself is a habit, a bad habit, a negative habit, an unwholesome habit that I let go of a long time ago. So that is no longer an obstacle for me. I no longer judge myself, which is really wonderful, because when you let go of judging yourself, I think that you can actually make progress faster. Because I think the judgment holds you back. And with that said, I'm going to go into the 7 steps to awakening. So today I am starting with number 604. And I have a link that I will share with you for those of you who like to read along in the journal. There's 604. The quote that I was contemplating before writing that journal entry is a quote by Nisargadatta Maharaj. And this is the quote. Keep on remembering. And then a colon. So what follows next is what he's asking us to keep on remembering. Keep on remembering. I am neither the mind nor its ideas. Do it patiently and with conviction, and you will surely come to the direct vision of yourself as the source of being, knowing, loving, eternal, all-embracing, all-pervading. You are the infinite, focused in a body. Now you see the body only. Try earnestly, and you will come to see the infinite only. There are several things that are interesting about this quote. One, of course, I just talked about changing habits from habits that are unwholesome or not helpful to habits that are wholesome or are helpful. And, of course, Nisargadatta is teaching a new habit. A wholesome habit, if we use Thich Nhat Hanh's language. He's teaching to keep on remembering, right? Just keep telling myself, I am neither the mind nor its ideas. Just keep saying that to myself. This is what he's recommending. That would be a habit, would it not? And, you know, also when I'm taking on this habit, if I agree to take on this habit that Nisargadatta is recommending, it's going to naturally replace another habit that I had. Because prior to taking on this habit with the mind, there was another habit of the mind, probably getting lost in mind wandering, probably believing I am the body, probably believing that, you know, for example, I'm being attacked, that different people are verbally attacking me, thinking bad thoughts about me, my reputation is at risk, I need to defend myself, I need to show everyone how smart I am, you know, whatever. There was something going on, a habit in the mind, a habitual thought process, an unwholesome habit, a negative habit, and if you'll pardon the expression, a bad habit. And Nisargadatta is recommending that we replace that with a new habit. And the new habit is to keep on remembering, I am neither the mind nor its ideas. And then notice how he says to do it. He tells us how to acquire this new habit. He says, do it patiently and with conviction. So to me, that's where the effort comes in. You know, Barb asked earlier, are you forcing? I said, not forcing, but I'm also not being lackadaisical and hoping this habit someday takes me over, right? I mean, there's an efforting going on to taking on a new habit. An efforting. He calls it conviction. There's conviction. A Course in Miracles would call it vigilance. NTI would call it being vigorous towards the new habit. But in addition to with conviction, he says patiently. And patiently to me means non-judgmental. As I mentioned, there can be a lag from the time that we decide or from the time that we recognize that we need to let go of an old habit and take on a new habit. From the time that we really see that and recognize it, there can be a lag before the change actually occurs. And during that lag, this is the time when we need to have conviction, put effort toward the change. But it is also the time that we need to be patient with ourselves. I call it being gentle with myself. Keep on remembering, I am neither the mind nor its ideas. Do it patiently and with conviction, and you will surely come to the direct vision of yourself as the source of being, knowing, loving, eternal, all-embracing, all-pervading. Now, this next sentence I find quite interesting as well. He says, you are the infinite focused in a body. You know what he doesn't say there? He does not say, you are the infinite in a body. He does not say, you are the infinite in a body. He says, you are the infinite focused in a body. What does that mean? Now, you all may not remember. In fact, you may not have even been here, and it's been a few weeks since I've done a Seven Steps teaching. But in one of my recent Seven Steps teachings, we talked about awareness. We talked about general awareness, which is just aware of everything, just aware. Awareness being aware. And some of you may remember I talked about the way to really realize general awareness is to relax. And then we also talked about what I call constricted awareness. That was awareness that I said, instead of being general and open, it's like constricted into a flashlight beam, and it's focused on something. And when it's focused on something, it is still awareness. But because it's so focused, you are unaware of everything except for the thing that you're focused on. And, you know, this has a purpose, you could say. For example, if I'm in contemplation in my house and Danielle and Jamie and Jasmine are moving about, I do focus on my contemplation to the point that they are in no way a distraction for me. In fact, I've told them that if you want my attention, you must say my name. Because if you don't say my name, I will not hear you because I'm focused on my contemplation. I'm not easily distracted while contemplating. So there is a positive use of this constricted awareness. But usually, most of the time, our habit is to have this awareness constricted and lost in thought so that we are so engaged with thought that we are unaware of anything else. Even if we seem to be aware of something else, the truth is that is distorted through the filter of the thought that we're constricted on. So, for example, let's say I have a thought about one of you. I have a thought about one of you that you are always lying to yourself. That's my thought. Oh, there's so-and-so again, always lying to his or herself. And as soon as I see you, that thought comes in. I'm constricted on that thought. I am then seeing you through that thought. And you may be telling me about an honest realization that's come to you during your contemplation. But I won't see that. I'll see you as lying to yourself because that's my perception and I'm constricted on my perception. So when awareness is constricted, we see everything through that filter. And therefore, we're unaware of anything else. And so what Nisargadatta is saying here is you are the infinite focused in a body. He's saying that your awareness is constricted on the idea that you are a body, that you are a person. You know, in my case, that I am Regina Dawn Akers. That is who I am. And I'm then going to see the whole world through that belief. One way that you know that you're seeing the whole world through that belief is because you see a world of objects. If I see a magnifying glass and I say that is a magnifying glass, the reason I believe that is a magnifying glass is because I believe I'm a person. That's actually, it's called a projection. It's seen through that constricted focus, the belief that I'm a person. So Nisargadatta is telling us you are the infinite, focused in a body. Now you see the body only. And the whole way that I see the world is through that filter. That's why I see so many other objects. Even the magnifying glass is a body of sorts. I do not see only one. I see many. That is because I am focused in a body. And I see the body only. And he's asking us again. He says, try earnestly and you will come to see the infinite only. And when he says try earnestly, he's referring back again to the habit that he has asked us to adopt. Remembering. In fact, he says, keep on remembering, right? With conviction and patience. Keep on remembering. I am neither the mind nor its ideas. That's kind of interesting, too. Because he has told us, you see only the body. You're focused on the body. Right? He uses the word body. But he's asking us to say, I am neither the mind or its ideas. He's not asking us to say, I'm not the body. Why? Well, the body doesn't have ideas. What is it that thinks I'm a person? Is it the body that thinks I'm a person? No, it's the mind. It's the mind that thinks I, not the body. So even though I am focused on the body, what he's asking me to say is, I am neither the mind nor its ideas. That's the solution. So let me read this one more time and then we'll go see what I wrote in my journal. Keep on remembering. I am neither the mind nor its ideas. Do it patiently and with conviction, and you will surely come to the direct vision of yourself as the source of being, knowing, loving, eternal, all-embracing, all-pervading. You are the infinite, focused in a body. Now you see the body only. Try earnestly, and you will come to see the infinite only. I didn't talk about that, but I love that last sentence too. So let me talk about that before we go to the journal. I don't usually get involved in discussions on Facebook at all. In fact, I don't even see them. That's why I don't get involved. I don't even see them. It's not like I see them and I choose not to get involved. I don't see them. I don't actually spend that much time in Facebook. I go in the morning, and sometimes I don't even go in again at all. Sometimes I may go in one or two times during the day. But usually the morning when I post the daily quote, that's when I go in. But today I happened to, something jumped out at me. It was Alex, he asked a question. And it just jumped out at me, and I did choose not to respond. But as I went about my day, the question kept showing up. So after about an hour, I went back and put my answer, you know, because it just didn't leave me. So I went back. And Alex's question was something about, you know, is the world real? You know, he was saying, I read in the Course, you know, it says at least so many times that there is no world. And it says, so he had exact numbers. It says so many times, he had, how many times it says it's a dream, you know, and is there a world? I think that was the question. Is there a world? Well, when Nisargadatta says, try earnestly, and then he says, and you will come to see the infinite only. What does that mean when you balance that with Alex's question, is there a world? What does that mean, really? Just listen carefully. Try earnestly, and you will come to see the infinite only. If you see the infinite only, can there also be a world? If that was true, then the word only would not be used here. The infinite only. So what Nisargadatta is saying, and what A Course in Miracles is also saying, is there is no world. There is only the infinite. That's all that there is. Why do I see a world? Because I am focused in a body. And if I believe I am an object, then I look out and I see objects. It's a projection of what I believe. But if I practice earnestly, with conviction and patiently, as Nisargadatta is asking me to practice, then what he is saying is that focus on the body, that belief in the mind and its ideas will cease to be because of my change in habit. And when my focus on the body and my belief in the mind and its ideas ceases to be, I will no longer see through that filter. I will no longer see objects. I will no longer see a world. I will come to see the infinite only. That is called reality. One of the things that I said to Alex in my answer today was, real, the word real is defined as, it doesn't have a beginning. It doesn't have an end. Sometimes people call that eternal. In fact, in this particular quote, Nisargadatta uses the word eternal, right? No beginning, no end, and absolutely changeless. If it has no beginning, no end, and it's changeless, then it is real. If it has a beginning, an ending, or it changes, it is not real. And if you accept that definition, then you look at the world, and it's clear that the world is not real because it changes. We're told it has a beginning and an end. We don't really know that. We have to take that on belief. But we can clearly see that it changes. So we know for a fact from our own direct experience that it doesn't meet all three of those criteria, right? So if it doesn't meet all three of those criteria, it cannot be real. But the infinite is called reality because it does meet all three criteria. It has no beginning, no end, and it's changeless. No beginning, no end, and it's changeless. So again, Nisargadatta is saying, keep on remembering. I am neither the mind nor its ideas. And of course, in order to really do that in the way he's asking, we have to let go of being lost in our ideas. You know, so quickly does an idea show up in the mind and we believe it with lightning speed. We're so sure that we're right. We're so sure that our thoughts are right. But what A Course in Miracles and what Nisargadatta Maharaj are telling us is that our thoughts are not right. And believing our thoughts is what causes us to believe illusion. So we're being asked to replace that habit of believing our thoughts with lightning speed with this habit. Keep on remembering. I am neither the mind nor its ideas. If I really say that to myself a lot, I mean a lot, I'm not going to have that habit of believing my thoughts like this. Right? I'm not going to have that habit anymore if I really practice this. If I don't practice this, I will probably continue the habit of believing my thoughts. Keep on remembering, I am neither the mind nor its ideas. Do it patiently and with conviction, and you will surely come to the direct vision of yourself as the source of all being. Another thing that's really important here is he calls it the direct vision. In other words, he's promising that this is not something that you need to believe. If you can let go of all believing. You don't have to believe anything. You can let go of all believing. Just practice this and you will have the direct vision. The direct experience. I said a while ago that, you know, we are told that the world has a beginning and the world has an ending. And most of us believe that to be true. But most of us do not have that direct experience. We don't have the direct experience of knowing the beginning of the world. We don't have the direct experience of knowing the end of the world. But we do have the direct experience of seeing that it changes. So that's something you don't have to believe that, right? You don't have to believe that the world changes. Every single one of us can see that. That's direct experience when belief is not necessary. And what Nisargadatta is promising is that you will have the direct experience of yourself as the source of being. He's not asking you to believe him. He's just asking you to practice something. And he's saying, if you trust me and practice this, then you will find out for yourself directly. Keep on remembering. I am neither the mind nor its ideas. Do it patiently and with conviction, and you will surely come to the direct vision of yourself as the source of being, knowing, loving, eternal, all-embracing, all-pervading. You are the infinite, focused in a body. Now you see the body only. Try earnestly, and you will come to see the infinite only. Okay, so with all of that said, I'm going to look now and see what came to me about 2 years ago when I contemplated this same quote. So I'm going to the journal, number 604. Continue the practice of losing interest in mind. Do not be discouraged. Do not grow tired. Instead, be encouraged, eager, and earnest. Mind is not eternal, and so it does have an end. Stay focused on the goal. Be not disheartened. Seeking the end of something that is not real is not a futile effort. It is a worthwhile focus. It is the best way one can spend one's time. I don't know about you all, but I have not been able to go, you know, as the saying goes, from 0 to 60 with losing interest in the mind. There are an enormous number of types of thoughts that the mind can spit out that I have lost interest in, that I don't pay any attention to. I literally have zero interest in them. But to say that I have zero interest in the mind as a whole, if I was to sit here and claim that, I would be lying to myself and to you. There are definitely still thoughts that capture my attention. Now, it was a long time ago. I don't know how long ago. Well, yeah, I kind of do know how long ago. I take that back. I do know. It was while the teaching of Inner Ramana was coming. So that would have been in 2009, the late winter or early spring of 2009, when I really saw clearly for the first time that I needed to change the habit of being interested in my thoughts to not having interest in my thoughts. But what is still occurring is that lag. I wasn't able to say in a real life living sort of way, okay, so I'm going to lose all interest in my thoughts starting right now and then do it. It didn't happen like that for me. there's been this continual noticing where thoughts do get my attention and the continual practice of losing interest. And I think, and some of you may know this as well, some of you may have this experience too, I think that the more I lose interest in my thoughts, the more bothersome the ones that remain become. It's like, it is, it's like we become more and more subtle. You know, the first thoughts that were let go of were the ones that caused obvious and enormous suffering. You know, like the I am bad belief. That caused obvious and enormous suffering. That was one of the first things let go. And that took some years. But that, you know, that was let go. And when that let go, a huge burden was lifted and great freedom arose. But it's not the only thought that I believed and had interest in. And so, you know, other little stories that show up that capture my interest. When a story captures my interest, one that before I would not even have noticed, now I feel the agitation of it. That's the way I'm going to describe the suffering. I feel the agitation of being interested in thought. And that agitation is a blessing. Because that agitation is pointing out another opportunity to lose interest. You know, we're kind of back to the discussion that we started with the valleys, the hills and the valleys. Right? When you're in the valleys, that's when the ego is showing up again. The ego has captured your attention again. Your interest is back with the mind. But the advantage of that is that it's another opportunity to let go of ego, to let go of interest. And you know, we hear about these people that seem to have these quick, spontaneous awakenings that come out of nowhere. But for those of us who have not had this quick, spontaneous awakening that comes out of nowhere, we seem to be involved in this process. And we are either more or less dedicated to this process. But the more dedicated we are to the process, the more dedicated we are to losing interest in our own thinking. Keep on remembering, I am neither the mind nor its ideas. Keep on remembering, I am neither the mind nor its ideas. I just keep on remembering, that idea is not me. That idea is not mine. That is not my thought. I don't need to say that sentence out loud to that person. You know, sometimes people say you got to stand up for yourself, right? You got to stand up for yourself. You got to tell people what you think. No, I don't. What self am I standing up for? Do I really think that? No, this process is the opposite. This process is when a thought appears, even if it appears with a lot of energy. A lot of energy, maybe a lot of defensiveness behind it, or a lot of, you know, arrogance behind it, or a lot of, you know, some other energy. My job is to look at it and allow that energy and remember, keep on remembering, I am neither the mind nor its ideas. I did happen to notice, I told you guys that I don't pay attention to Facebook anymore, and that's true. But that Alex's post caught my attention today, and it did. And I saw his question, I went away. Stayed away for like an hour or so, I don't know, maybe 2 hours, and it stayed with me, so I went back to answer. And when I went back to answer, there were a lot of other comments there. I don't know if those comments were there when I first saw his question. I didn't notice them, but they were there when I came back. And so before I wrote my answer, I thought I would just look and see if someone else had given the same answer, because if so, then there was no need for me to type an answer. And I scanned the comments. I didn't sit down and read them in detail. But what I saw were a lot of comments that, as far as I could tell, had nothing to do with the question asked. Like the conversation, it seemed like very quickly went off into some other direction. And I would have to say the vast, vast, vast majority of the thoughts that were written into that comment stream were the types of thoughts we're being asked to lose interest in. The types of thoughts that when they arise, even if they arise with a strong energy behind them, my job is to look at that thought and remember I am neither the mind nor its ideas. And I ask you, if I do that, am I going to type them in Facebook? No, of course not. It's not going to go that far. Not if I'm doing what Nisargadatta is asking me. Not if I'm really practicing, really dedicated to this process of losing interest in the mind. So again, let me read Nisargadatta and then let me read the journal entry. Keep on remembering, I am neither the mind nor its ideas. Do it patiently and with conviction, and you will surely come to the direct vision of yourself as the source of being, knowing, loving, eternal, all-embracing, all-pervading. You are the infinite, focused in a body. Now you see the body only. Try earnestly, and you will come to see the infinite only. I don't think I'm going to go on to discuss 605, but 605 just caught my attention. Usually the next quote I'm not even looking at. So since it popped out at me, I'm going to go ahead and read 605 too. It fits very well with 604. Listen to 605. You have never been, nor shall ever be, a person. Refuse to consider yourself as one. You see how that's the same teaching, the same changing of habits. You have never been, nor shall ever be, a person. Remember, you're the general awareness. You are the general awareness. But because that awareness has been, with effort, constricted and focused on a body, focused on the mind that thinks I am a body, you think you are a person, but you have never been a person. You shall never be a person. All right, so I'm going to go back to the journal. I'm going to read 604 from the journal. Continue the practice of losing interest in mind. Do not be discouraged. And again, this is being written because, as I mentioned, the realization that I needed to lose interest in mind came in late winter or early spring 2009. Here I'm sitting in the fall of 2012, and I still have interest in mind. Heck, right now, here I am sitting in the late fall of 2014. And, you know, I started this teaching by saying, I've fallen, right? And I don't know what to say, right? That's the song I played. Do you know what that feeling of I've fallen was? I became interested in a story in the mind. That's all. Nothing else. I found myself giving attention to a story. So still, in the late fall, almost winter of 2014, that lag is still happening. And you know, the mind just wants to say, give up. This is never going to happen. Give up. And Nisargadatta does not say give up. Nisargadatta says keep on remembering, do it patiently and with conviction. And then he promises, try earnestly and you will come to see the infinite only. And so the journal entry says, continue the practice of losing interest in mind. Do not be discouraged. Do not grow tired. Instead, be encouraged, eager, and earnest. Mind is not eternal, and so it does have an end. Stay focused on the goal. Do not be disheartened. Seeking the end of something that is not real is not a futile effort. It is a worthwhile focus. It is the best way one can spend one's time. And now there's another song that's popping up in my mind, so I'm going to play this song, and hopefully you can give the attention to this song, listen to it without mind wandering, because if you listen to this song, I think that you're going to find how well it fits with this teaching and what a wonderful song it is. Some people have already told me it's their favorite song. Since we've been introduced to it, we were introduced to it by Kirtana when she was our guest this summer. It's the one song I did not have in my collection that she told me to add. It's called The Train Song. So listen carefully.
Just because the tracks are laid, or just because your ticket's paid for, and some crazed conductor keeps on calling out your name, you don't need to board the train. You don't need to board the train. Trains of thought will come and go, but you are not your thoughts, you know. So why get all caught up in where they lead? You are who these thoughts are passing through. Don't you see? You are who these thoughts are passing through. Be free. Be free. Even when you're feeling frightened, sad, or hurt, unenlightened, you can find a peace that underlies what passes by. Don't mistake the weather for the sky of your being. Why mistake the weather for the sky? Feelings rise and fall away, even those you wish would stay. So why your sense of self with mood? You are who emotion passes through. Don't you see? You are who emotion passes through. Be free. Be free. Taking birth in this human form, with the chance to see that who we are was really never born, can never die, is always free. If destiny decides to strike some version of the script you like, and make a melodrama of your endless cabaret, you know you can still enjoy the play. Yes, you can, if you're still, you know how to play. Just treat it like mystery, and view it from the balcony. Laugh and cry and stomp your feet, but don't believe the pain. You are who these scenes are passing through. Don't you see? You are who
this place passing through. Be free.
Alright, that's it for the verse, and I'm out of time. So I'm going to just gently turn down the music and say goodbye. And I'll be back here in 2 hours to go over today's daily quote. So I'll see some of you then. Bye.